You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome back to Burned, a true crime podcast combining the best of the stage. Now, speaking of the best, today, you guys, today is a really big deal because we have a true crime legend and a legend of the stage. He is the creator of the Obsessed Network, and he is the co-host of the wildly popular True Crime Obsessed. Theater people know and love him because he has many theater podcasts too, including Theater People, Broadway Backstory. He's a big fucking deal. It's Patrick Hines.
Hi, girl.
Hi.
How are you? Thank you for having me on your podcast. I'm obsessed.
Thank you. Well, that is high praise coming from you because Obsessed is the name of your whole freaking network, which is a big, humongous deal.
Well, thanks, girl.
We were just talking before we went live about your most recent podcast.
Oh my goodness.
About the murder, what's his name?
Gary Heidnik.
Gary Heidnik.
The documentary Monster Preacher. Oh my, I mean, it's that story that like is not well known. It's like this man who took like six women hostage prisoner in his basement for like months and months and months in Philadelphia, like in the 80s. It is bananas.
Crazy story. I was just telling Patrick how I was dropping off my daughter at school, my beautiful 3-year-old at school, as I'm listening to Patrick and Jillian talk about this man who like dismembers women and is like roasting their ribs in the oven and feeding them to other women. It's so gross. It's a horrible, horrible story, but it's wildly entertaining. And speaking of wildly entertaining, my friend, you guys are going to be on a Broadway stage.
Yeah, we are going to be the first podcast to ever play Broadway. I can't even remember the date. It's April something.
April
now.
22nd. I have April 22nd. It for you.
Oh my goodness. It was slated for June of last year, June of 2020. And of course everything got canceled, but yeah, we are playing Broadway. I don't even know what to say. I'm beside myself.
Do you know? I mean, it's April 2022, so it's a little bit of a ways away.
No, April 2021. So it's like this. Oh no, you're right.
2022, dear.
Oh my God, Blake, what is wrong with me?
I know it's crazy. The year has passed, but it's April 2022.
Yeah, you're right.
It didn't happen already, but do you know yet what crime you're going to talk about, or like what show you're going to do yet?
So the way that our podcast works, as you know, we recap true crime documentaries. So we are working with Discovery ID right now on maybe partnering with them on something, or we had an idea of something, but we don't know exactly what yet. What we do know is we are hiring an actual Broadway director who is going to help us incorporate like actual Broadway elements into the show. So we do our live show all over the country. We tour all the time.
Yes,
and it's our standard like live show, and it's so fun and it's great. But for Broadway, we wanted to make it more of a Broadway experience. And so we're actually bringing in some folks that can help us do that.
Holy shit. Well, listen, April 2022, kids.
Yes.
Are tickets on sale yet?
It's sold out.
What? Patrick!
I know. Stay tuned, though.
I didn't buy a ticket. Can I get a ticket?
You are on the list. You are coming.
I'm on the list.
You are absolutely on the list. Yeah. We might be adding a second show. We're doing it at the Hayes Theater with Second Stage. So they've been so amazing and so, like, accommodating. And since we're the first podcast to ever play Broadway, we had to negotiate a whole contract that will be, like, the contract that every podcast who ever plays Broadway in the future will work under. So that's been a little bit, it's been a fun, exciting challenge. challenge.
Okay, but so if Burnt ever comes to Broadway, I'll call your lawyers.
Yeah, please, absolutely do it.
Do you have an upcoming episode that you're working on? I know the Alcatraz one that's coming out,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah. So then our next episode is called Escape to Alcatraz. So like I said, we recap true crime documentaries. And this documentary is about the indigenous people in San Francisco in the 70s who decide, you know, Alcatraz is that island in San Francisco mm-hmm. Bay where it was the notorious prison for like 60 years. But then they shut the prison down. And, you know, back in the, you know, back in the day, way back in the day, it was indigenous land. And so in the 1970s, the indigenous people decided to reclaim it, and it's fucking awesome. And they go out on a boat, they take over Alcatraz for like a year, trying to reclaim it for indigenous people, and they get like the support of the world. It's like such a cool, it's such a cool story.
Where is the documentary airing?
That is a, oh, it's ABC, it's Hulu. It was on Hulu because it was like an ABC
so
News.
So everybody,
production.
If you want, if you haven't, which I'm sure if people are listening to this, they absolutely know True Crime Obsessed already. But if you haven't, if you're like the one person who doesn't know it, go and watch Escape from Alcatraz or Escape to Alcatraz.
Yeah, Escape. This
Escape
is Escape
to Alcatraz.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, watch that, then go and watch Patrick and Jillian be hilarious and burn the whole thing down. It's amazing.
Burn it to the ground.
Burn to the ground. Okay. So today I asked Patrick to come here today to talk about some more scandals that have happened on the Broadway stage. Some of them are a little funnier than others. Our first one is one of my favorite things that's ever happened on a Broadway stage ever.
Are we Laponing right now?
Yes, we're Laponing. we're going to Lapone Town. Now, I need to make a disclaimer that I'm a humongous stan for Patti LuPone.
Oh,
so
yes,
don't ever
same.
Come to me with any bullshit about Patti LuPone. She same. Will always be the winner.
Yes, same.
Winner.
Yeah.
So this is a very notorious story. Patti LuPone.
It's so good.
It's so good. Okay. The background is January 10th, 2009. It is one of the final shows that Patti is playing in Gypsy. It's her second to last night at the St. James Theater. That's the setting. During her performance, click, 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 flash,
oh my God.
Flash, flash. During Rose's turn.
Oh my God.
Right? Of all
yes.
things. How dare you?
I have one question for you, Blake. Who do you think you are?
Who do you think you are? Now, Alan, can we play a little bit of the clip, the famous clip?
Terrified. This was years ago. I'm still terrified.
My butt is clenched.
Yeah.
Right now. Can you imagine?
Get him out. Oh my God.
Okay. So who do you think you are? And Patrick Hines, if you don't step onto the Helen Hayes fucking stage and say, who do you think you are? You are no friend of mine. Okay.
No, I, you know, like, we're the opposite. I want to come out, like, in a Patti LuPone wig and costume and, like, scream at people for not taking pictures.
Well, listen. Patti is having absolutely none of it. And so that's legendary. My favorite part is that a cell phone picked it up, and that's what made it so legendary.
Yeah. It's like some bootlegger totally got the story. It's
okay,
so crazy.
But do you know the aftermath story of it?
Well, they made a remix of it.
Well, wait. But do you know who was taking the pictures? Do you know the person?
No.
Oh my God, I'm going to blow your mind right now. I'm going to blow your mind. Okay.
Bernadette Peters. It was Bernadette Peters.
It was Bernadette Peters in the fucking house and Glenn Close. The two of them were just sitting there clicking
away.
Okay, wait for it. So do you remember a couple of, I think it was months later, there was this beautiful pictorial in New York Magazine of Patti LuPone's final week in Gypsy. It started with her. Do you remember this?
No.
Okay, it started with her The pictorial essay was her in her bed reading her cell phone, and it took the reader through a series of beautiful photographs through her final couple of shows in Gypsy. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Uh-huh.
So, cut to the brilliant photographer, Jillian Laub, is in the audience. Snap, snap, snapping pictures. And Patti LuPone
throws her out.
Stop the show!
No! So wait, it was a sanctioned photo shoot?
Yes, it was New York Magazine!
What? So did the woman explain it as she's being dragged out of the theater?
She does not until years later. It's like Broadway's best hidden secret.
Oh my God, I had no idea. That is the greatest story
ever. I heard about
ever.
It first from the press agent, that they bring her back, that she's freaking out. She's like crying hysterically, the photographer, as you would be. Could you imagine Patti LuPone? If Patti LuPone said to me, can you move out of my way? I would break into hysterics.
Totally.
Screaming at me in front of 1,000 people.
Totally.
She's crying. She brings her backstage. Now, years later, Jillian on Instagram, this is what she has to say. I was on assignment for New York Magazine to photograph Patti LuPone's last Gypsy performance. I came in the day before to scout the theater and figure out timing. I was mistaken for an audience member. Patti stopped the show mid-song and started screaming in the top five most mortifying experiences. When she realized afterwards it was me, she was just as mortified. She called me later that night to apologize. Hashtag Patti LuPone.
Oh my God, I've never heard that story.
Well, now you know.
I'll tell you, one of my first theater going experiences in New York, I went to see Golda's Balcony with Tova Feltschuh at a Wednesday matinee, and we were not 30 seconds in, and the lights come down, it opens with her like at a table smoking, and there's like a thunderstorm, and she's like giving her monologue, and she just goes, stop. Stop the show. Who is taking pictures? You, sir. In the second row, she starts pointing somebody out. She leaves the stage. The house lights come up. The ushers rush in, and the people in the seats are ratting each other out. Miss Felch was pointing at him. Miss Felch was pointing at him. The queens were there to rat out their own. It was unbelievable.
Well, I mean, cell phones and the theater have, I mean, not everybody is a podcaster who's like, you know, is going to come in and be like, take my picture. So we all get it. Everyone hates cell phones. Yeah. Do you remember when Lin-Manuel Miranda like ratted out Madonna?
Yeah, wouldn't let her come back to say hi.
No, he was like, get the fuck out of my show. You're on your cell phone.
But then is it Jeremy O'Harris? Is he the one who wrote Slave Play?
Yes.
And
yes.
He was saying that like Rihanna. It was fine that Rihanna was on her phone.
Rihanna can do whatever the fuck she wants. Which, yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. But then Patti comes back years later. She's in another show.
Where she
grabs in character. Yes. This is why I will always stand for Patti LuPone. If I ever get a fucking tattoo, it will say, I love LuPone. In character, walks off the stage, grabs a woman's cell phones, and continues the show.
Yes, puts it in her own pocket and walks away. It's unbelievable. Like, it's unbelievable.
Unreal. Well, that's an amazing scandal. I can't believe you didn't know that it was the photographer, but now you know.
No. Oh, my goodness. That's a crazy story.
Can you imagine?
No, I would have been hysterical. Wow. I would have been sobbing. I would have been beside myself.
And they're all screaming. And if you know. I mean, I'm sure anyone who's listening to this podcast has listened to that a bajillion times. But they're screaming
and again,
and yelling,
there's
get
a
her
remix
out.
Of it.
I mean, if you're like ratting on your seatmate because of Tova Feltschuh, imagine if it's Patti fucking LuPone.
Oh, forget it. In her final performance,
in her final
Gypsy
forget performance
it.
During forget Rose's it. Turn, nothing's worse.
No.
Anywho, okay, so the second scandal that we're going to talk about is Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, my God. I have another small connection to this story.
Oh, no. Why?
Yeah. Well, it's not a real connection, but, like, you know, what came first? Like, the Orphans thing came first and then the Arrested Cabaret?
Yes. Yes.
I worked for this little company, which shall remain nameless, but this one of the guys who worked at the company, like, ran, like, the bar at Studio 54 or wherever it was playing.
It was Studio 54.
Yeah, he kept the credit card receipt that Shia LaBeouf signed the night that he got arrested. And, you know, you can't, like, there's no information, there's no usable information. Like, there's
no,
not,
but
not,
I would hang it up in my house. It's like he a piece had of it, artwork.
Yeah, totally. And the thing is, Shia LaBeouf tipped 100% on his bill. His bill was like $74.50, and he tipped $74.50.
All right, that's a little bit of a redeeming quality. Good for you, Shia LaBeouf. Good tipper. Yeah. I'll take it. I mean, maybe don't go then get dragged out of a Broadway house.
No.
Maybe not that part, but the good tipping part I'm here for.
And then cry on the sidewalk? Like, girl, get it together.
It's a lot. Okay, so.
He's dealing with some definite, like, mental health situations.
Yeah, this is a lot. This is very, a lot of darkness around this Shia LaBeouf. But anyway, it provided a bit of entertainment while it happened. And 2013. So 2013 comes around. And it's also very reminiscent of the Jeremy Piven of it all, which was what we talked about last episode when he left Speed the Plow. It's like these very famous, or these like flash in the pan famous actors who are amazing actors, but they get this Hollywood about them. And then they come to Broadway and they have these like epic meltdowns. And that's not how we do it on the Broadway.
No.
Or like Faye Dunaway. Remember when Faye Dunaway was fired a couple of years ago?
Yes.
For beating up a stagehand or some shit.
Yes. But like Shia LaBeouf was like, you know, I was just reading a story about this a minute ago to like prepare for this. He was saying his whole MO in Orphans was to come in. Like he said he came in method. So I don't know the play, I didn't see it, but like I guess his character is supposed to be intimidating, the Alec Baldwin character. He said he was sleeping in the park. He was coming in, all he wanted to do was intimidate Alec Baldwin. He was following him home. He was stalking the guy.
Crazy, right? Okay, so the backstory is it's this show Orphans. It's Shia LaBeouf, Alec Baldwin, and Tom Sturridge, who I didn't really know, but at the time I think he was dating Sienna Miller, and that's why I was like, he's hot. Okay.
Yeah.
It's this show from the 80s. Alec Baldwin's like this mobster, rich guy, and these two brothers, one was supposed to be Shia LaBeouf and the other one was Tom Sturridge, they kidnap the Alec Baldwin character to get money, right? So they're in rehearsals, and as you say, Shia LaBeouf is crazy method acting, not sleeping, following Alec Baldwin home, which is insane.
Yeah.
And it all started, which is kind of funny, that the way this all started, this epic meltdown started because Shia LaBeouf was like off book and Alec Baldwin wasn't off book. It's so silly.
The toxic masculinity of it all.
It's a lot. It's like a lot of fragile, white, rich.
Yes.
Famous
totally
people, like,
men,
how dare you not be on off book for me, Alec Baldwin?
Yeah.
So then, rat-a-tat-tat, a couple of, like, emails fly back and forth about, like, fuck you, you get on book or some shit, and they end up, it's so stupid, and they end up firing LaBeouf. So fine, creative differences is the line of the day, they say, and he leaves the show. Now, cut to a month later, Alec Baldwin does a Vulture interview where he talks a whole bunch of shit about Shia LaBeouf in the most like privileged, rich, famous white guy quote. This is what Alec Baldwin has to say, which sets Shia LaBeouf off. Some of the greatest movie actors had really serious theater careers and still do. And many film actors, though, are purely film actors. They're kind of like celebrity chefs. You hand them the ingredients, they whip it up and they cook it and they put it on the plate. And they want a round of applause. In the theater, we don't just cook the food and serve it. And that's what set Shia LaBeouf off. Like, give me a fucking break.
Oh my God, you guys. It's like, I mean, like you said, just like the privilege of it all. Like can you just learn your lines and do the show and understand how grateful you should be?
Right? Well, it was such a fucking disaster for both of them. Shia LaBeouf never came back to Broadway, and Alec Baldwin never came back to Broadway.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, Alec Baldwin, God love him. I mean, like, he's had so many epic flubs in the last couple of years. Like, he just can't do or say the right thing to save his life.
Well, what's crazy is that, like, a few years before, you know, Alec Baldwin's all, like, clutching his pearls over not being treated correctly by Shia LaBeouf. Now, granted, I'm not sure I would want my coworker following me home from the job, but
yeah.
Alec Baldwin, if you remember, Alec Baldwin left, or Jan Maxwell left an off-Broadway show that she was in with Alec Baldwin in 2009, the late, great Jan Maxwell.
Oh my, because there is nobody better than Jan Maxwell.
Punched a fucking hole in the wall.
Alec Baldwin did?
Yes, and that's why Jan Maxwell left her show. So it's like, if anybody could give maybe a little slack to some young, crazy, hepped up, like, actor, yeah, it should be Alec Baldwin.
Well, and then Shia LaBeouf said later that, like, after he got out of prison for his shenanigans at Cabaret, Alec Baldwin was the first one to write him an email and say, like, it's going to be okay, man. Like, I've been there, too. It's just, it's so absurd, all of it.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So after he blows up, after he goes, he gets thrown out for, quote, creative differences, he's pissed off that Alec Baldwin said this stupid garbage in Vulture, and he goes on a Twitter rampage. Remember when Twitter rampages were a thing?
Yeah, totally.
The good old days. So he goes on a Twitter rampage and he leaks all of these silly emails between Shia and Alec Baldwin and Dan Sullivan, the acclaimed director.
Yeah.
Basically, like, Dan Sullivan placating both of these idiots.
Yeah.
It's just so silly. Then cut to, as you said, Shia LaBeouf goes to Cabaret, the great revival at Studio 54.
Yeah.
My favorite part is Pasek was in the audience and was live tweeting it while it was happening.
He was?
Yes.
Oh my God.
He grabs Alan Cummings' ass.
Yeah.
And he got drunk and $74 worth of booze.
Yeah. Which is like a single
pour. Gonna say, it's not that much, but okay.
No.
He gets drunk or high or whatever he was, goes create nuts a Cabaret. Cabaret of all fucking things. Gets dragged out of the theater in handcuffs. He gets charged with one count of trespassing and one count of criminal trespass and harassment in the second degree. Crazy. And spends the night in jail.
Shia LaBeouf, get some help, sweetheart. Like,
I feel like he just needs... For Cabaret, Patrick.
I know. I will say that show is a party. I can see getting a little hammered at Cabaret, but
listen, we've all had our nights where you get you get the little plastic clinky cups and you
totally
have a good time. I'm all for it.
But
$74 worth of booze. Keep your hands to yourself. Don't get, I mean, of all the places, out of Cabaret, getting dragged out in handcuffs. My word.
I know. Shia, you have scandalized my friend Blake. This is unacceptable.
My word.
Well, $74 in booze at Cabaret is not that much booze.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. But he's, he goes on to have very sordid past.
And
he gets sued by his ex-girlfriend. He did a porn movie?
Yeah, he did a movie called, what was it called?
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. He has real sex.
Real sex on camera. Then he did a weird art installation.
Yes.
He went on to plagiarize he did a big apology thing with Alec Baldwin and Dan Sullivan where he plagiarizes his whole fucking apology. He, in a very dark twist, recently he gets sued by FKA Twigs, who sued him for being abusive during their relationship. Like, he's not a great guy. He's got lots of demons.
Yeah.
Lots of dark demons. But that was an interesting day at Playbill. I was like, I can't remember the last time someone got arrested at a Broadway theater.
Yeah. And Benj Pasek was there for the whole, that's amazing.
Interesting. Okay, this is our last scandal.
Oh my God, I didn't know anything about this, and then I read the whole article.
This is very, This is very true crime obsessed. And so that's
why I
picked this next one.
Yeah, I can't believe there hasn't been a documentary about this.
Yes. Right? There maybe should be. Now, most of this is taken from a great article that Jeremy Gerard, the great Jeremy Gerard, wrote in 1988. It is called The Life and Death of a Broadway Producer. Oh, hold on. I'm just pulling it up. But it is about Norman Keen. Now, Norman Keen was the producer of O Calcutta, which if you're a youngin' listening to this, you might not know about it. But O Calcutta was a humongous hit. Like, it ran for almost 20 years on Broadway.
Yeah.
It's still one of, like, the longest running shows. And it was like a review type thing. People got naked. It was like a very salacious sports time type of show. Right? So Norman Keen was sort of, was that producer. He saw it from its infancy, and that was his big claim to fame. He had his actress wife. He had an apartment on Riverside Drive. They had a summer home in Montauk. He was like the typical fancy schmance, or trying to be fancy schmance, Broadway producer type. And then this, again, from the Jeremy Gerard article, I'll start reading a little bit because it's a little crazy what ends up happening. So
it's so bananas.
Bananas, right? So as they, this is what Jeremy writes. Try as they might, however, the Keens never achieved more than peripheral artistic success in the unforgivingly competitive world of New York theater. Remember, this is in the 80s.
Yeah.
The late 80s. Growing older, they settled for the more mundane rewards of society and economic security, a compromise that exacted a devastating toll on Mr. Keen's self-respect. Now, he was married to, I think her name is pronounced Guida Dunhow. She was a actress of her day. She was in a movie with like Tony Curtis. She replaced for a couple of people on Broadway. So she was the actress. Not of like humongous acclaim, but still a well-known actress of her day. And he was this producer of a really successful show. So that's like sort of setting the stage.
Yeah.
As you get deeper into this article, and I'll post it in the show notes because it's a really good article if you're into that kind of stuff. So Jeremy goes on to say, he could never be certain whether people considered him a good soldier or a buffoon, a word used repeatedly. So he's setting the stage for Norman and Guida as this sort of a bit of a golden couple of the town, the society type people, but perhaps not as golden as Mr. Keen would like. So this is another part of the article. He writes, last spring, two things happened that probably ruined Norman Keen's resilience. He became head of a theater advisory committee at a nonprofit theater in the Hamptons. They brought in the show Silver Fox, and he wanted to bring it to Broadway, and they told him he couldn't because it was like some nonprofit to commercial gobbledygook, and they were like, forget about it. During the same period, the producer learned that Guida, the wife, was having an affair, which I imagine was, most of the impetus for what happens next, which is really crazy. So Norman Keen is in his apartment on Riverside Drive. He sends his 14-year-old son off to school. He promptly stabs his wife in the back, in her like lingerie, in her bedroom.
Yeah.
She's dead. He closes the door. The maid comes in.
For hours, the maid is there.
For hours, and cleans the house.
Doesn't go into the bedroom because she knows the lady of the house likes to sleep late.
Yes, she knows the lady of the house. I mean, this is a moment of time if it's anything. So the lady of the house is sleeping / murdered in the bedroom.
Dead.
Norman Keen is still in the apartment. After the cleaning lady cleans the whole place, he hands the cleaning lady $150 and a bunch of notes and stuff. And sends her on her way. Bye. Thanks for cleaning the house.
Oh.
He then scrambles on top of his building to the roof, takes his glasses off, and jumps into the courtyard below. A doorman finds Mr. Keen's body.
That is so unfair to the doorman.
Correct. Can you? I mean, of all the things.
No, I mean, I know. My God.
In a courtyard, right?
Oh.
So crazy. And then the son comes home and finds the mom. I mean, nobody thought to check.
I know. I looked up the son, though. He was 14 years old. I tried to figure out what happened to him.
So
there's no information.
I couldn't find it. I think his name is a little too generic to really find. And like, this was the 80s. So this whole internet trail didn't necessarily follow the son. But crazy. So Norman and Guida, they met in summer stock. They had like what was in all, like by all reports, a pretty good marriage. And then she started cheating on him, and he sent a private investigator to follow her around. I mean, it gets like bordering on obsessive. He sounds like he like completely went unhinged, obviously, and then murdered his wife.
And the big note that he left was like, please make sure O'Calcutta keeps running.
Yes!
Not like, please make sure that my son is taken care of. And,
no!
You know what I mean?
His suicide note was about O'Calcutta. Can you imagine?
No, and I feel like it did keep running. I feel like what I read was that, like, it kept running for years after that.
It ran for, like, almost 20 years. So it was, like, crazy town.
I can't believe, in all my years doing theater-y, podcast-y, true crime-y stuff, I can't believe I never heard that story. I never knew that story.
Well, now you know. And another person that was in this Jeremy Gerard, and this is very, very deep dive Broadway, but Paul Libin, the great legend.
Yes,
lived in his building.
Yeah, I know. Oh my God. When I interviewed Paul Libin for the Broadway Backstory episode about Fun Home, and I went into his office. He had like so many Tony Awards that some were on the floor. He had they were all like on like a mantle, and then there wasn't enough room for all the Tonys. So they were like on the floor while he was trying to find another place to put them.
Yes, Paul Libin is. Lots of things. He is an absolute legend. And apparently he lived in Norman Keene's building. I mean, crazy.
He was one of the only people in the article that had nice things to say about Norman Keene.
Right? I know.
You know?
I mean,
like, to murder your wife
scandal.
And then take your own life and then leave your 14-year-old kid. Like, that is just wow.
And to say, please make sure my show keeps running.
I know.
It's just a lot.
Imagine you're in the cast of that show and you find out that night. Like, what?
Bizarre, right? I can't remember if there's been enough. Listen, anybody out there who's listening, if you know of any other murders that happened in and around Broadway, let me know. But I can't really think of any. I mean, we're usually very docile people.
I know. I feel like if we go back to like the 20s, I bet we'd find a lot back then.
I'm sure that was a crazy time. I'm sure there's some showgirls buried underneath 7th Avenue somewhere. Ick. Oh, well, Patrick, thank you for bringing some true crime scandals to Burt.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so fun. I am obsessed with you. I'm so glad you're doing this. This is a podcast that we need, you guys.
Yes. And so make sure you check out, if you haven't already, check out the rest of Burnt to get a crazy ass story about Rebecca, the craziest scandal one of the craziest scandals that Broadway has ever seen, besides, you know, murdering your wife, which is pretty fucking crazy.
Yes.
And if you haven't already, Patrick is going to make another fucking show on Broadway so that people can actually buy tickets. Me included.
We're going to try to add a second show for True Crime Obsessed on Broadway. We're going to try.
Okay. And you're going to promise me that you're going to come out. Who do you think you are?
Turn your cameras on. Take your picture. Who do you think you are not taking my picture?
Exactly. Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks, Blake.
For sources and more information on the Rebecca scandal, visit bpn.fm/Burt.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.